Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I am your host, Nick Fay. With me back again this week, Corey Waldron, Jesse Corwin, and Dennis Dow. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Good.
How is it already November? What the hell's going on?
Yeah, wild, man. Christmas shopping. Here we go.
And this is the time the NBA season usually starts. We already got, you know, about seven games in for a few teams, but yesterday we had some news. Two of the top five picks from the 2015 draft did not have their fourth year option picked up. Mario Hezonja and Jahlil Okafor. You know, this is kind of surprising. Usually, you know, teams are going to pick up this option. It's not a big contract. But who is more surprising that their team didn't pick him up, Okafor or Hezonja?
I mean, I think just by, you know, name recognition to the masses, obviously you're going to point to Okafor, a guy with who had, you know, huge expectations coming out of college, of course, the number three pick. But I think he's one of those very rare cases where the NBA kind of game, the transition of it, passed right by him right before our eyes, right? He came in back to the basket guy, like pretty consistent scorer. But he's just obviously his skill set is obsolete at this point. So I'd have to go with Okafor.
I'd say Okafor as well, just because – like you said, he came in with a lot more hype. However, you know, Hezonja had a lot too, but it was more about his confidence. With Okafor, though, it just doesn't make a lot of sense that they're, you know, they were so big on assets during the Sam Presti era. And although that is over to, not Sam Presti, I'm sorry, Sam Hinkie. But to me, Okafor, I think that to an extent, yeah, I mean, his skill set is not something that teams are after these days, but I think he has some skills to be a successful NBA player. You know, he doesn't really do a lot defensively, and I think that's what hurts his value and hurts him getting on the court. Offensively, I mean, he can score, you know, I mean, and to me, I've always thought and I've always said when I've talked about Okafor, he needs to really just, he needs to really look at a player like Greg Monroe. You know, Greg Monroe came in, he was a back to the basket scorer, had a couple of good years, but people thought he might be on his way out of the league because he just could not defend. But he's really turned himself around in Milwaukee. He's a sixth man for them. He plays, you know, he plays hard on defense. He's still not great. But that one to me was surprising just because I thought Okafor could be something for them in terms of a sixth man, but I mean, you know, like they've been talking about recently, I mean, he's completely out of the rotation. So that's pretty shocking.
Yeah, I'm going to go on the opposite side. I think Hezonja is slightly more surprising only because we've known the Okafor situation and we've kind of seen his, you know, role within the team diminish over the last couple of years. And Hezonja, you know, he had all those comments of him. I mean, the guy has so much confidence for a guy who's barely played more than three seasons in the NBA. But he really hasn't gotten a chance either to prove himself. At least Okafor had a chance, and we got to see Okafor not be able to play defense. Hezonja just really doesn't get those kind of minutes in Orlando.
Yeah, I could see the point about Hezonja because, you know, he's not expected to be, you know, Okafor is expected to be a star player, you know, a key rotation guy, where Hezonja was kind of a raw prospect and you knew he needed time to develop. So that is surprising. I think the Okafor and Monroe comparison, that was great. And I think if Okafor is going to bounce back in another situation, that's going to be how. So out of these two guys, who do you think has a better chance of bouncing back on a new team, maybe, you know, if they're traded or bought out this year or signed with another team next year?
So first of all, I want to say, Corey, like really good on that first point. I'd have to say you won that first round because that's a really interesting angle I hadn't thought about much is that, you know, Okafor's devise has kind of been right in front of us. So something to be said for that. And I mean, we think about Okafor, it's like when you talk about Derrick Rose, you're like, oh, what is he, like 24, 28, 30? Like, dude's 21, you know what I mean? And I think what hurts is he went right before Kristaps Porzingis, of course, Philly right there next to New York. So that makes it extra painful. But I think to answer your question, Nick, moving forward, I mean, I'd have to think Hezonja jumps on somewhere, you know, pretty easily given his skill set. It's a little more versatile. Although, if you know, I think if Okafor finds the right system in the right place, whether it's the Celtics eventually or elsewhere, I think, you know, he's got some game left.
Yeah, I'd say Hezonja just because the skill set, like Jesse just said, he comes in, you know, he has a reputation as a shooter, and he's got some athleticism to his game. He's, you know, he's 22. And the funny thing was, you know, like I know Bill Simmons has made the joke, and a couple other people have as well. When he came out of the gate and struggled, it was kind of that joke of like, you know, he's going to be the starting two guard for the championship Spurs in like 5 years down the line. So, you know, Hazonia, I mean, he like you said, I mean, he fits more in with today's NBA. And, you know, looking at his stats, I mean, his career average for minutes is 16 minutes a game. And they have so much depth on the wing in Orlando now with, you know, with Fournier, with Ross, with Simmons, just with a lot of those guys, I just don't see him getting a lot more minutes. So I would say, yeah, I mean, Hazonia, I would say he has a better shot.
And remember, I mean, the Magic had that big draft class, you know, those couple of years, Aaron Gordon, Elfrid Payton. So there's a lot of money that's kind of like, I feel like it's up in the air right now. So it's, yeah, I think yeah. Maybe in another situation he might have got the money, but
sure.
I mean, I think if Okafor can find the right system, like I saw a tweet the other day of someone saying like the Popovich will pick up Okafor and Okafor will look like the next Tim Duncan in 5 years.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, certainly.
I mean, I think it just depends on how he's used. I like you mentioned before, Dennis, with the Greg Monroe comparison. I mean, if he offensively, Okafor hasn't really ever been an issue. It's just that defensive side. And yeah. Off the bench, there's no reason Okafor can't come in and give you, you know, 14-7 off the bench in, you know, 20 to 25 minutes. I think it's all about just finding somebody who will give him the chance to actually show what he has in the NBA.
Yeah, Corey, and to that point, I mean, look at the futility of the 76ers you're dealing with. You know, several different front office guys over the short span he's been there. They've been all about, you know, the hype and the process and rookies. And, you know, it's easy, you know, and they had the bevy of front court players with Noel, you know, and of course the big guy. So that, you know, it's been a major factor. So, yeah, maybe in another system, like, you know, you're telling me if he goes to the Celtics or, like you said, the Spurs, that he doesn't, you know, fit in and all of a sudden is able to play at least serviceable defense and be a factor. I think that's possible.
Well, and I mean, it could go the other way too. He doesn't shoot it great from outside. He doesn't shoot a lot out there, but he's skilled in terms of, I mean, he's actually got a nice little handle for being a big guy. So if he could reinvent himself in that way, make himself maybe more of a shooter, I could see him possibly being able to fit in more easily. But, yeah, his big problems are defensively, definitely.
Yeah, I think you guys had a ton of great points. Hazonia probably has more fits around the NBA where he can kind of fit into a lot of different systems, where Okafor doesn't have many, but he's obviously the more talented guy. But talking about, you know, Jesse mentioned all the rookies in Philly. Ben Simmons this year, obviously he missed his first rookie season. This year he's been, you know, amazing. 18 points a game, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, over 50% from the field. He's looking like a possible all-star. Do you think there's potential for Ben Simmons to make the all-star game in the East this year?
I mean, you know, it's a tall order. I mean, who's the last guy?
Grant Hill,
90.
For the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, like 95, right?
Yep. Yeah, 95.
So, and I mean, who didn't love Grant Hill? He was awesome when he was young. But, I mean, yeah, Simmons has been amazing. I mean, obviously the thing with him is his shot, but the size, you know, I mean, at 6'10", the way he handles the ball and the way he, you know, he's got the little kind of hesitation at the elbow and uses his body really well. He's really fun to watch. And the thing that stands out to me is just kind of his attitude. You know, he just seems like a really hungry, not going to settle for kind of mediocre. And, you know, I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility. I mean, the big question that kind of comes into it then with the All-Star game is the positions and then now the lack thereof. It used to be like, okay, who am I competing with at point guard? Who am I competing with at shooting guard? You know, it's obviously a little bit different now, rather just kind of a palette of 15 guys. I think that opens the door. It's more likely, say, than it would have been, you know, 10, 15 years ago under the similar circumstances. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility right now. I mean, how do you keep them out, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about them. It's all about the Sixers. they have won a couple of good games. They look to be playing well. So if they're in the hunt around the All-Star break, I would say he definitely gets in. I mean, anybody averaging, you know, he's averaging 18, 9, and 7 right now. So, I mean, if he's averaging that, putting up those kind of numbers for a winning team, I think he definitely gets in.
Yeah, I think you guys pretty much said everything I was going to say. I mean, he's averaging, like you said, Dennis,
oh, Corey, 18, don't be 9, like and that. 7.
I mean, the guy's almost averaging a triple-double through his first 7 games in the NBA. He already has a triple-double. And the Eastern Conference, as we know, is eh. You know, if he balls out like this, you know, through January, I don't see how you can't give him an All-Star nod.
And I mean, that's the big thing. It's been what, you know, 7 games. We're barely getting going here, but it's hard to deny the skill and size mix the guy has. He's fun to watch, you know.
Yeah, it's a versatility, like offensively, defensively, and like you mentioned, Jesse, his jump shot. I don't think he's even hitting a 3 yet in the NBA. So he's doing all of this without a 3-point shot. That's obviously something he can kind of establish.
Yeah, I mean, he's Ricky Rubio plus a foot, you know, yeah. which is handy.
And a great athlete, too. So I think, you know, that's definitely a nice mix for the Sixers. Is there any other rookie that's coming close to the level he's playing at, or is he like the clear-cut favorite? Obviously, like you guys mentioned, only, you know, 7 games of the season. But has he looked like the best rookie by far so far this season?
Tatum's looked pretty good for Boston.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sorry to cut you off.
No, no, Dennis. Why don't you go ahead? Yeah, I think you're onto something.
Tatum's looked really good, considering, you know, for a second there were a lot of people that were ready to write off Boston's season after Hayward went down. And I think of Brown and Tatum, I think Tatum's been the more consistent player. Now, granted, most of the time rookies tend to hit some kind of wall. It happens at different times for different guys, but so far I'd say Tatum has looked really, really good in terms of just being able to score, being able to defend, and fitting in with what the Celtics do.
Yeah, Dennis, I think watching Tatum night in and night out, is, you know, as I do, the thing that really strikes you is, you know, one of the big questions, of course, was defense, blah, 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 which is, I feel, is kind of a crutch. When guys don't know how to assess a guy or where he'll fit to hedge your bet, you're just like, you know, I don't know about his defense at this level, et cetera. But in college, you know, so many times it's systems or it's, you know, different philosophies or different positionings. And a lot of times there's, you know, there's not a premium on defense like there is in some NBA systems. And certainly as we see in the playoffs. So watching Tatum night in and night out, his length is just really something. And that's one of the reasons the Celtics, you know, when you look at the analytics this year, are near the top in every significant one defensively. And I really surprised a lot of people there is if you look at every position, just the growth in length that they take up across the court is really something. And Tatum's part of that. I mean, I've seen him, I think it was a couple nights ago or 2 games ago, you know, he picked up a point guard off a pick and roll at the top and picked his pocket and went the distance, you know. And, you know, I think one thing about him, too, is he kind of lets the game come to him, and I hate that expression, but that I think that puts it into perspective. Is, you know, he doesn't take a ton of bad shots. If it's there, he takes it. If not, he kind of facilitates. I've been really impressed with him. That being said, the clear answer right now is Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I think Ben Simmons is the clear-cut favorite. And then if I had to say, like, who 2 and 3 were, I'd say second would be Tatum, and third would be De'Aaron Fox. Even though
I haven't had a chance to see him play much, but the Kings are in town tonight, so I'm looking forward to seeing that one.
I got to see the Pacers beat up on the Kings last night. De'Aaron Fox is probably the only bright spot for the Kings. He looks good.
I love his game. I love his speed. You know,
he's quick.
Unfortunately, his wrists are the size of hot dogs, so that's scary.
Ben Simmons, though, is the clear cut. I don't think he's just on another level. He's just too well polished. You can just tell it's a guy who – I mean, like, yes, it's his rookie season, but he's been training, you know, all summer. Like, he has a, you know, two summers with the Sixers training staff and everything else to get more into NBA shape.
Yeah, it's been great to see all these rookies. Like, has it felt like this season that we've seen a lot of contributions from rookies across the board? You know, pick 1 through 30. I feel like a lot of rookies are getting playing time this year compared to previous seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen it in San Antonio, not necessarily just this year, but the past couple of years in the playoffs last year, a lot of significant run And for the Celtics, you know, Tatum's getting, I think, near, you know, 20 minutes a game or so. And Jaylen Brown in his second year, his time is up significantly. Of course, the Gordon Hayward's injury factor there. But that has been a major surprise from that angle. And that is interesting. And I think, you know, with the speed of the game, I think the premium on athleticism more so than kind of YMCA Zach Randolph ball as we continue to evolve or devolve, depending on your view of things. I think the premium on the athleticism and bunnies, you know, I think that grows. So there could be something to that.
Yeah, I would say that it seems more that drafts are in some ways a deeper to an extent. I mean, you have a second-round pick in Memphis. Dylan Brooks is playing really well for them. Second-round pick at Golden State, you know, Jordan Bell's playing well for them. It's just deep. You know, Kyle Kuzma, people are saying he's the steal of the draft, which he was picked, I forget when, but in the 20s, I think?
27.
Yeah, thank you. And so I think the draft is just deeper, and I think some of these teams legitimately draft guys, and they come over, and they're like, wow, this guy's pretty good.
You know, Dennis,
taking spots.
I think you hit on something there, and it's player development at the younger ages. You know, in the age of AAU and sprawling suburban leagues and city leagues, and, you know, it used to be you played high school basketball, and then, you know, you played baseball, and then you played football. And, you know, with year-round, you know, we see guys that are 16, 17, 18, and, of course, your body is one thing. But, you know, as far as skill set, a lot of these guys are more NBA-ready than they used to be, you know, staying 4 years or even a couple years in college. So I think you did hit on a point there that, you know, I think guys just are progressing quicker and are ready to contribute sooner once they get to the league.
Yeah,
sports-specific training, like when I was in college, that was a big thing they talked about. Like you said, at a younger age, kids are focusing more on one sport. You know, it might even be in middle school where they focus solely on basketball and they play year-round, they play AAU, they play travel. And it helps them because, like you guys mentioned, it's probably about 40 rookies have already played solid minutes in the NBA so far from this draft class, including first and second round picks. So definitely.
Which at the same time, you know, you talk to a lot of people and it's maybe not always the best approach being so sports specific. And I contend that, you know, that's why we see as many injuries as we do is that, you know, when you're only using the same muscle groups over and over and over and over and over and you're never doing anything else. You know, your body can be incomplete and you can have some weak points. And so I do think there's something to that. You know, you didn't see the sprained ankles like you do now, the bones literally breaking in half or things like that. Like, you don't remember those kind of injuries back in the day. And I think, you know, in the fall, those guys were playing football and beefing up and doing football type workouts and exercises. And, you know, I think there's something to be said there too.
Yeah, repetitive motions.
Yeah, I would also say, too, I think part of it might as well be how it just seems like there's a lot of teams in the NBA that are willing to just play young guys now. I mean, if you think about it, it seemed like in the 90s and even the early 2000s, it seemed like bad teams had like a their superstar, if you will. You know, like Mitch Richmond played tons of years for the Kings, and they never went anywhere as a franchise. And there's just not many teams that are doing that. I mean,
I love Mitch.
Oh God, I love Mitch Richmond. But you know, you have teams that now they're embracing, you know, being young. Like the Suns are starting, you know, they're starting guys that were rookies last year. They started last year. You have teams like Indiana's playing young guys. I mean, just so many teams are more willing to play younger guys now. In addition to some of those veterans,
yeah. Well, here's the thing with that too is that, you know, now as an NBA owner, as opposed to what we were talking about before, you're gonna sell out your arena, so you don't have to have your one Mitch Richmond out there or your Clyde Drexler or your
unless you're the Pistons, apparently.
Yeah. Well, they moved downtown, so hopefully, you know, that'll start to grow here. I think that's a big help coming from Auburn Hills, but. I think there's something to that as well, that the product is just so much more valuable and so much more entertaining, whether it's the home team or the visiting team. I think as a owner or a coach or front office, the need to be gimmicky is much less. And, you know, you can kind of just put the best players out there. So maybe that's something.
Yeah, and I think fans too, to an extent, are smarter in that, and so you actually have some fans who they don't want to see those guys. They're like, we need to blow it up. You know, we need to be bad for 4 years, which is kind of crazy to think about. And it's just one of those things where, you know, you want those young guys coming in. You know, I grew up in Kentucky, and you know, as a big UK basketball fan for a long time, and everybody hated Tubby Smith because he recruited these guys that nobody knew that were mature and they developed. But it's like everybody hated him because they just weren't those young superstar type level players. And now, you know, everybody loves Calipari. So what are you going to do? And I killed the podcast.
Nice. No, I was gonna make fun of you.
I just had nothing to add.
I was waiting for Corey to pull out an audio gif.
Moving on from there, let's talk surprises of the season. Obviously, we had some teams pop out, but I'm going to give you two options. You're going to tell me which one's a bigger surprise: Porzingis or Antetokounmpo's start to the season.
Antetokounmpo. You want some context?
We can get context after. We could just go through.
Okay.
It
okay.
Antetokounmpo, Giannis,
Porzingis.
I love Corey. He always says the other one.
I'm going to agree with Corey on this one because I think the Giannis explosion was a little bit more anticipated.
You anticipate 35 points a game.
I anticipated an explosion though, like a dark horse MVP. He was going to get a lot of touches. Like Kristaps is playing with bad players in New York. And he's still averaging 30 a game. And I thought he would take another step, but this is the first time KP's had to do it on his own. You know, he's had Melo there the whole time. Giannis has kind of done it on his own for a whole year. So I think it's just a little more surprising. I think they're both, you know, great starts, but I didn't expect KP to be at this level quite yet.
The Knicks are much more surprising, but
Right.
I would say it's more for me the field goal percentage. I mean, the guy's shooting, what is he shooting, 65%, something crazy like that? He's just – and the fact is, like, he doesn't have a jump shot. Everybody knows he's going to the hole, and you still can't stop him. To KP's point, I mean, KP's looked really good. I'm glad they got rid of Melo. I think it's going to help him in the long run. As you guys know, and if you read OTG, I'm not really a big fan of Melo, but, you know, I like that they're giving him – the keys to the offense and they're just basically saying, okay, you're the guy now.
Who do you think's more likely to have, you know, a great season going forward? You know, who's going to keep it up more? Obviously Giannis's numbers are a little bit more, you know, ridiculous. So it's going to be harder to keep him up, but who's going to have, you know, bigger numbers to keep up all year long?
Well, that's tough. Cause the Greeks numbers are so, and I'm kind of making fun of Tommy Heinsohn of the Celtics broadcast here. He can never remember his nickname, so he just calls him like the Freaky or the Greek God or like some variation of those. So it's always very funny. So I think the Greeky, and he gets all frustrated. So the Greeky, his numbers are so exorbitant right now. I think he will obviously drop a bit. He's not going to average 35 for the season. What was the question again, Nick? I had a good point.
It's who's more likely to kind of maintain this high level throughout the season, like these numbers.
Right. So the issue for me with Porzingis is, you know, he's got a history of lower body injuries, and he's so rail thin with his height, with the way he plays. That scares me with him when we talk about an overall season. I think Antetokounmpo is much stronger. You know, obviously much more athletic, but I trust him more from a durability standpoint. So I'll take that angle on that question, and I'll say I expect Antetokounmpo to have a better season.
I would actually, with this one, I would flip. I would go Porzingis just because Milwaukee, there's a lot of people starting to speculate that Jason Kidd might be gone. So it'll be interesting to see – What happens if they make a coaching change with Porzingis? I mean, just because he can score in a lot more different ways than Giannis. And I mean, he's shooting, you know, it's not like he's shooting these astronomical numbers that are going to come down. I mean, he's pretty much in line with how he's developed throughout his career so far. So I think Porzingis will continue. I don't know if he's going to average 29 by the end of the season, but I would say 26, 27 a game.
I mean, you don't see many offenses that are run. This guy brings the ball up, dribbles into the paint, and shoots anytime he wants. If not, he kicks it to the wing and posts up. Like, the entire offense runs through him. And if they do hire a new coach coming in, what are you going to do? You're going to give him the ball. I mean, so I think even if Jason Kidd leaves, your number one option is still Antetokounmpo. I just think Porzingis isn't as naturally aggressive. Numbers will be there, although he's, you know, he's a ton of fun to watch. Corey, yeah. What do you got, man?
Yeah, I think the problem with Antetokounmpo is he's got to do everything with his team. Like, he's got to get his own buckets while get everyone else involved as well. Like, he's just got so much pressure on him. So I do think his numbers will drop. But, I mean, for me, that's my dark horse MVP guy. Porzingis, I don't think the Knicks are going to be good enough.
I mean, who's Porzingis got? He's got Ron Baker, who's, like, got a bad porn name. Who's like his point right. guard with a Justin Bieber cloth, like taking. I mean, I hate to make fun of him. I love watching him at Wichita State, but you know, and I've always been a on the low Mike Beasley fan too. So it's kind of fun to watch them. And Hernan Gomez is like a pretty good player. So I look forward to him hopefully not being injured. And Cantor, your Kentucky guy, I've talked about my affinity for him. I think he's one of the top like underrated guys in the league too. So.
See, I don't get that. He never even played at Kentucky anyway, but whatever.
Yeah, I just don't think the Knicks can keep it up. I think Porzingis will be solid, but I want to see him keep up this kind of production for an entire season.
Go ahead, Corey. Sorry.
We've already seen Porzingis, you know, he takes steps back in the later part of the season. Like last year, the second half, he wasn't as good as he was in the first half. Continue.
Do we think that Porzingis' teammates are going to hurt him, you know, in the sense that, like, I've watched a good amount of the Knicks games, and he hasn't got hit hard with double teams yet. Obviously, moving farther into the season when you're starting Jarrett Jack at point guard, you know, you're probably going to get more double teams for Porzingis. Do we think that's going to hurt him as the season progresses?
That's just poor coaching on the opposite side. You're playing the Knicks, you double Porzingis. I mean, you collapse on Porzingis every chance you get. And I guarantee you when the Celtics play him, that's what will happen. Although Al Horford has really stepped it up on the defensive end this year. So yeah, I mean, and that's what I was talking about with Porzingis is the durability. Lower body injuries on a guy that's 7 foot tall is just a recipe for disaster. Even if they're minor Knicks, I mean, they're not going to get better. So that is a major, you know, question. And, you know, the Knicks obviously aren't going to continue this kind of run throughout the season. You know, so we'll see what kind of mindset creeps in then.
All right, next question. Who has been more surprising in their slow start, the Warriors or the Cavs?
Well, I believe I spoke to you gentlemen last week, and I did say something to the effect of the Warriors having some problems there. But, I mean, this one, it has to be the Cavaliers, right? I mean, this is fun to watch too, right? I mean, it goes straight from the offseason drama, like no break, right into the season. And they're still, you know, confused. Dwayne Wade, a.k.a. Milli Vanilli, doesn't know what's going on with, you know, starting or coming off the bench. J.R. Smith is, you know, clearly confused. They have the players, you know, the players sound off meeting this week. And, you know, you always hear that. And as a sports fan, you're like, oh, must be bad. Like, that's always the thing you hear. And you're like, oh, this is at next level now. We got the players only meeting. I think it's partially all the different pieces. And I think it's partially they're old as hell. And I don't think they have great enough leadership to figure that many variables out is the problem right now.
Cousins.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing. Because he would probably stab LeBron.
They're just in panic mode. They're going to make a move out of desperation. I can just see it. They're getting panicky.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, every time I watch them, and even when they were adding all those guys, I couldn't stop thinking about the 2012 Lakers situation where they brought in Steve Nash, they brought in Dwight Howard.
Yeah, that's good.
Basically, I mean, Dwight Howard, everybody hates him for that time in LA, but the only reason they made the playoffs was him. He was the only player that played any defense. Whoa. He's the only one who
really
played any
year. Kobe had a really good offensive year. He was crazy.
Offensive, but again, like with the Cavs, it's the same issue. Like offensively, they haven't been as good as they've been. Defensively, they are awful, just like that Lakers team. And the problem is, though, they don't have a Dwight Howard that can bail them out and help them defensively. Now, granted, I agree with Corey 100%. I think they are going to make a move. What they do with that move, I know that people are a little worried about Kevin Love just because of some of the injuries and his age and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, they have assembled a team of older guys that are not known for their level of defensive intensity. And it's just this is what's happened to them. And I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, they start making lots of moves. But they need to do something because defensively, I mean, they're getting trashed by – they lost to the Nets, killed them. The Magic killed them. The Knicks killed them. I mean, they're
just getting killed by everybody. Give me some. What moves are they going to make?
Well, I mean, for starters, I would definitely just try to – I mean, to be honest, like with the way Brooklyn is playing right now, I wouldn't be shocked to see them maybe try to move that pick and maybe package that pick with a couple of salaries maybe they want to get rid of. Now, in terms of like – to be honest, like you kind of put me on the spot. I haven't thought about it, and I don't even know who's available, but – Bledsoe makes a lot of sense. What they could give to get him, I'm not sure. But defensively, Bledsoe is going to help you. I don't know how that works when Isaiah Thomas comes back. But they've got to do something. They've got to get some guys that are going to actually play defense and play it well if they're going to be successful.
I think you're seeing the loss of Kyrie Irving show up a lot. And, you know, we talk about how he's not an elite defender. But one thing he does do is he moves his feet. He spreads his arms. He's got active hands, and he meets the ball handler high up near half court from the 28-foot line or north of there, where a lot of these guys, they come in, and before the defender even picks up that point guard, he's at the three-point line. And it's those little subtle differences and high IQ basketball plays that can make a huge difference in the context of a defense of a team. And, you know, I think coming out of last season, like you had Korver, who had the terrible playoff run. You got Derrick Rose. And again, I think, Dennis, I think it was you last week who pointed to the contract situation. A lot of guys in a contract year. LeBron, yeah, who doesn't have to prove anything to anybody, but Derrick Rose, and the list goes on and on. Dwayne Wade, you got all these guys. Did Dwayne Wade sign for one or a couple years?
I don't know. One.
Just one year, right?
One, yeah.
Right,
one.
So you got all these guys. That creeps in there, and, you know, kind of where do I fit on this team? And there's a lot of variables, a lot of big egos, and a lot of accomplishment in one room trying to, you know, it's like the Traveling Wilburys for these music fans. Just too many, too many good musicians in one group to last, unfortunately. You guys are too young, but look them up.
What about you, Corey?
I definitely agree, Dennis, that the Nets pick is expendable. At this point, it's going to be probably a lottery pick at best at this point. Because I think the Nets can arguably squeeze into that 8 seed. Don't hold me to it, but it's still there. And I don't know if Bledsoe works long term, only because he needs the ball in his hands. I think if you want to get somebody to bring in, you got to make sure they can still play around
this year, right? I mean, you got LeBron, you got this window. You're playing for this year. You can't even. Really think 100%. About next year because we all know he's gone. I mean,
100%. I just don't think Bledsoe is that short term guy that you want if you're trying to win this year. I don't think it's Bledsoe for the Cavs. I think it's the big man. I would personally think it would be Cousins. I just don't know who else you can even get out there that is enough to flip the defense and also add a scoring punch. I mean, there's not that many guys out there that I feel like the Cavs can even offer a lot to or for.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a big problem is the Cavs, there just really isn't anything much they could do. What they need is younger athletic players to kind of keep up with the speed of the game. They seem really slow. They have a lot of old guys. You know, they just seem like, and they don't have that same energy every night. And you need a lot of assets to get young players. And all they really have is that Brooklyn pick. And I don't even know on the roster, maybe you can move Kevin Love, but you're not going to get a ton back for him because you haven't really helped his value in Cleveland. So I don't know if there's really much the Cavs can do. They just kind of have to figure this out. Like,
you know what hurts too?
Chemistry sucks.
You know what hurts too? The fact that Tristan Thompson is making max money and he's playing 20 minutes a game. Like that contract, looking back, is so horrendous now. And that's partly LeBron's fault for saying we have to pay Tristan Thompson the max money he wants.
Exactly. All they need to do is sign. They signed Dwight Howard. I think they're good to go.
I would trade for Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard looks
that's,
good so far.
That's all. That's all they need is another ancient guy with major ego issues. But yeah, no, I mean, but to be real on the court, it might help them.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, the Cavs are pretty much locked into this team. Just yeah. I pulled up their salaries. I mean, next year Kevin Love $24 million, Tristan Thompson $17 million, J.R. Smith $14 million. Iman Shumpert's got a player option for $11 million, which he's opting in. You got Kyle Korver for $7 million, Jay Crowder for $7 million. I mean, they're kind of locked into this team, and it's hard to see them, like you guys said. I mean, I just don't know what moves they make to get better. Just because, you know, if they do make a trade for DeMarcus Cousins, I don't know who you're taking from New Orleans or who New Orleans would even offer to ship with them. So.
Or if New Orleans is even willing to do the deal.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. You offered Kevin Love and that Nets pick for DeMarcus Cousins straight up. You take that, I think.
So, yeah. Yeah, so that begs the question then, Dennis and Corey, at what point in this season do the Cavaliers, because I told Nick over the summer that the Cavs should try and trade LeBron. He's got the no-trade clause, but I told him, I told Nick, and we had a conversation about it over the summer, that I think they should trade LeBron, and LeBron would want to do it because he can then leave Cleveland without being the villain again. So he gets traded, then it's, oops, I'm a free agent. He'd be into it. No more pressure. You think he wants to lose another finals this year?
Never.
Maybe what?
He'll never leave in the middle of a season like that. He'll never waive that.
So here's the question then. With the way they're playing now, how long does this go on until the front office, you know, the new brass there has to blow it up? Because right now, for the trade deadline, if you take each one of these parts, they're greater than the sum of the whole. So if you move these parts, you can get a pick here, a young player here, decimate the roster, and then all of a sudden you do have a future. Whereas right now, if you go through this season and don't make a major move, and you're done.
Well, that's the issue.
How long does this go on for?
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue, though, is I think Cleveland and I'm
– Don't tell me they think LeBron's going to stay. Don't tell
me. No, I don't think that. I think they legitimately think, though, that this is just like what happened to them last season at the end of the season, except it's happened a little earlier. And I think they genuinely think, you know what, all we got to do is get in the playoffs. Even if we're the 7 or 8 seed, we just got to get in the playoffs and we'll be fine.
So it's full on denial until
I think so. But okay, yeah, and that's the thing though, is I mean, thinking about it, you know, I mean, the more I think about the DeMarcus trade, I don't think they would do a DeMarcus trade just because Cousins is going to be a free agent. So I don't think they're going to give up the Brooklyn pick and Kevin Love for nothing.
They don't care though. They know they're playing for this year. They're clearly not playing for the future. I mean, that's obvious in their moves, right? They know what their window is. Do you think they're worried about his contract?
But I mean, they would go into that season with nothing. They would have no Kevin Love. They would have no LeBron James. They would have no young player to build around. Isaiah Thomas would be a free agent as well. I mean, who on that team could you be like, all right, we could at least be competent and we have a good season moving forward? They don't even have a good young player.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You have the safety net, though. If LeBron leaves – and you have Isaiah Thomas still. You can throw max money at Isaiah. You can throw max money at DeMarcus Cousins and kind of just hope that maybe those two want to stay in Cleveland.
But do they want to stay without LeBron? And, I mean, you could pay Isaiah Thomas, but not, you know, not wishing him the worst, but we don't even know how he's going to come back from this injury.
In the Eastern Conference, if you have DeMarcus Cousins, Isaiah Thomas, on paper, you're still a 4 seed at worst, a 5
seed.
That's if Isaiah Thomas
is healthy, though. We have no idea if he's going to come back. And you still need a rest of a team. I mean, you have 2 All-Stars, but if you don't have players around them, like the Cavs are playing bad right now, LeBron's the best player in the league, and these guys aren't playing well around him, they're not winning.
Look, free agents don't go to Cleveland. You have to build young. You have to stockpile picks. That's what you have to do right now. You have the assets to do it. You have a chance. If you wait too long, you're in NBA purgatory for a guy.
LeBron ain't leaving, though.
Yeah, I think he came out on that. I mean, I think he came out at the beginning of the season and said he's not going to okay any trade.
Yeah, he did say something.
I mean, he actually came out and said that because I had the same idea.
What's he going to say if he's asked? What do you expect him to say?
Oh, well, I expect him to say I'd expect him to not comment. I'd expect him to say, "Oh well, we'll see what happens," you know. But I mean,
a sneaky move they could do that would kind of protect them and maybe help them build short term is package Kevin Love in that Brooklyn pick and trade for a younger player that's under contract for multiple seasons. Where so not Cousins, but somebody who I don't have any names off the top of my head right now. I don't know who's going to be on the block. But somebody who has a few years on his deal and at least has all-star potential.
Yeah, I think that's smart.
That's kind of like a short-term, long-term. We're kind of half protecting ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I would just if I was Cleveland, I'm just trying to get rid of some salary. So I want to if I'm Cleveland and I feel like this season is not going to go well, then I'm saying okay, I want to get rid of Tristan Thompson. And I want to get rid of Kevin Love's salaries. And if that takes, you know, putting something that, you know, that Brooklyn pick to give, you know, to trade it to some for a younger guy who's under contract, I just think that they're in a bad salary situation. I mean, that team next year without LeBron, you know, whether or not the pick is in the lottery or not, it's not going to be anything to change kind of how they're going to be. So that'll be interesting. I don't know. I mean, what you're saying is interesting that, you know, you think LeBron is going to be traded, but
I don't think he will be. I think that's the smart move if you want to give yourself a chance to move forward because –
Yeah,
I think tying your cart to him and just that is trouble, man. I mean, you're basically your franchise right now is hinged on his decision and IT's hip, which are two huge question marks.
Yeah, I think I had the idea and I was sharing it with people about, you know, if I was Cleveland, the second that Kyrie Irving came and said he wanted a trade, I would have immediately started working on LeBron.
Exactly.
And just said, listen, like, we'll trade you, make us the bad guys, throw us under the bus. You wanted to stay. We wanted to trade you. You didn't want to be anywhere you didn't want to be. And they could have gotten, I mean, if he wants to play with New York so bad, you know, why don't you offer LeBron to New York for KP straight up and see if they do it, you know?
No one says no when you say you call someone up and say, "Do you want LeBron James?" And the words "no" don't come back to you at all.
Well, I mean,
I want to put this one caveat in there with this whole discussion is that this is based on the situation that the Cavs would not be contenders to the Warriors. So if they were to all of a sudden
turn it around
at a high level, I think all things being equal right now, I don't think they hold the Warriors to under 140 points a game. So I don't see them winning a series against the Warriors. But if they feel that they can, you go all in this year. You try to get the championship. Absolutely. That's what it's all about is the championship. What I'm saying is the higher percentage play and what's more likely, at this point, they'll be lucky to get out of the East. So, what are we doing? That's my point.
Yeah, Cavs are definitely something we're going to keep an eye on, see if they can bounce back sooner than later. But another surprise, you know, which team has been a bigger surprise so far? The Memphis Grizzlies or the Celtics without Gordon Hayward?
Corey, you want to start this one?
That's fine. I'm going to say the Celtics without Gordon Hayward. Even though Memphis has had this nice run, I think because of the way Gordon Hayward went down, all the hype, and everyone in the media pretty much ripped them off when Hayward went down. Then Jason Tatum really stepped up. Jaylen Brown has played very well. Terry Rozier has looked like that asset that Danny Ainge didn't want to trade. Horford, like Jesse mentioned earlier, has been really good defensively. And, you know, offensively, he's doing everything. And Kyrie's been solid. You know, nothing special, but Kyrie's been solid. I think Celtics at this point have definitely been a surprise.
Yeah, Corey, I got to go with the Celtics, of course, myself as well. So they started 0-2, 5 in a row, of course, and then the win versus Spurs recently. I think the first time in like more than a decade in Boston anyway. And so now, you know, looking pretty good in all those points, Corey, you brought up well taken. The defense really rounding into form. And, you know, when you talk about silver linings, like look at the reps these young guys are getting with Gordon Hayward out when he comes back. You know, he's a guy that you don't really worry about chemistry or fit. He's the kind of guy who can smart enough to figure that stuff out on his own. For Memphis, you know, they've been impressive to watch, but, you know, remember, I think five of their first seven, I think, were at home. Five wins, you know how they play at the Grindhouse. So, you know, when we're talking about such a small sample, seven games, five at home, I think that's a factor. The Celtics, I think, have played four of the first seven on the road, if I'm correct. And so something to, a little something to look at there, but both pretty good starts.
Yeah, I would have to go the Celtics as well, just because, you know, coming into the season, I think some people questioned some of their roster in terms of their depth. But, you know, like you said, I mean, I don't really want to say, oh, there's a silver lining to Hayward's injury. But like you said, I mean, the young guys getting the reps, I think that's huge. And Horford, I love that he's getting more attention. I think he's always been a great defender. He's always been a good offensive player. He doesn't score a ton of points or grab a lot of rebounds. But, I mean, that's a guy that I think any team in the league would want on their team. And but in terms of the Grizzlies, I think with them, I worry about a regression just because their bench has been amazing so far this season. I mean, they are getting a ton of production from their bench, and I just don't know if that can continue.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the Celtics start says a lot about Brad Stevens. Like you said, Dennis, there's questions about the roster being so young, so many young pieces. And the Celtics are playing good ball right now. And Grizzlies are a surprise, though, to me, too. I mean, going to the season, they really didn't do a lot to improve their roster. Fizdale has these bench guys playing really well. So who's more likely to keep it up as the season progresses?
Oh, for me, I mean, for me, it's the Celtics. Because you got to think, you know, youth is only getting to get better. The Grizzlies, you know, so that's a factor. And of course, Dennis touched on the bench of the Grizzlies a lot, which we know plays much better at home. So consistency from your bench, you know, they're not going to play that way every night. So that's big. I think the rotation of the Celtics, you know, there's just so many guys that can do so many things. Like Aaron Baines on his defense has been incredible so far this year. I mean, he's been a bruiser inside, and that was a couple of the major variables in my mind for the Celtics heading in were, of course, the youth and how they respond. And I think check marks in both spots. You know, the Garden's been lit every game, and the defensive intensity is absolutely there. And Aaron Baines, I think, has been a really big upgrade over, you know, some of the guys that were in the middle last year, like an Olynyk, Amir Johnson, et cetera. So the Celtics really have sustainability here. And I mean, sky's the limit for them. They're playing really well.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with the Celtics just because, you know, if you're relying a ton on Chandler Parsons and Tyreke Evans, it makes me nervous. But the Celtics, I'd say as well, just because it just appears that they fit. Kyrie Irving fits really well. And I think Brad Stevens, I think he just continues to prove what an amazing coach he is. And they look really good. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they were, you know, the one or the two seed in the East, despite not having Hayward. And to be honest, like, based on how Jay Crowder has played so far, I mean, it looks like they may have, you know, dodged a bullet there by trading him when they did.
I mean, how good is that trade looking now when you –
It looks really good for the Celtics.
You know, you mix the confluence of what the you know, what the Nets are doing at 3-5. We probably didn't think they'd get three wins all season. So they're there. They're Savage. Playing okay. No, I'm sorry, Nick. I wish I could take it back, but what's done is done. So there's that. There's, you know, the Isaiah Thomas injury, which is a massive variable. And, you know, with the way Kyrie is fitting in,
Well, and if you have Crowder, I just don't – I mean, you're not giving minutes, that many minutes to Brown and
well,
Tatum.
Well, that was the thing that gets lost, you know, when you're looking at these trades and you're not watching the game. You know, you think about that stuff less than you watch the game, and you're like, man, I'm really excited that, you know, Jaylen Brown and Tatum's playing more or Baines or whatever. So, to me, Baines isn't much of a drop-off from Jay Crowder, the way he was shooting threes at the end of the season. Baines hits that elbow jumper. He's physical. He can guard most guys inside 18 feet. So, I think that, you know, the trade gods are certainly between that and Markelle Fultz. When we talked about Fultz last week saying, you know, I think Dennis, we said, you know, they said at the time, we'll look at it again in three games. So they were supposed to make a call Tuesday of this week. I think by the end of the weekend, they're like, yep, he's out
3 weeks.
Yeah. So yeah, he's done. He's retired. So I think the trade gods are looking pretty good to the Celtics these days.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think they were going to be a one seed after Hayward went down, but then again, I didn't think the Cavs are going to be a 10 seed. I didn't think the Magic would be a 2 seed. I didn't see the Pistons being a 5 seed. There's a lot of things I didn't think were going to happen that so far have happened.
Yeah, it's early.
Besides the Hawks being 1-6.
Corey, that's actually very funny because I'm like a 10 seed. All right. There's no 10 seed, Corey.
Well, they're 10th in the conference. So
I gotcha, man.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see why the Celtics can't remain on top. You know, let's be realistic here. Even if the Cavs get back on the right track, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, they probably still have this next month in November where it's going to be really shaky. I just can't see this team all of a sudden, you know, flipping that, you know, that switch that everyone alludes to. And all of a sudden, you know, they look like the contenders are supposed to be and whatnot. So I think if the Celtics keep playing the way they're playing, there's no reason they can't make a little bit of a gap between them and Cleveland. And then once Cleveland gets on the right track, which I do think they will eventually, you know, they'll have enough of a lead to in which they can hold that one seed. Because I don't see Orlando hanging up there for this much longer.
Well, guys, some shots fall, some shots don't. But the Celtics right now, 15 less points per game on defense than the Cavaliers. That's going to travel. So we'll see what happens there.
Celtics D has been really good. And like you guys mentioned, Al Horford has been playing ball, especially on D. But before we get out of here, you know, Corey mentioned early on, this is November 1st today. What was your favorite Halloween costume from October 31st, you know, NBA-wise from your NBA players?
Oh, man, I got to pick one. Okay, so we know LeBron had his costume party. I couldn't make it, unfortunately. My costume, you know, I hit some snags late with that. So I couldn't do that. But I saw the Steph Curry video. We saw him riding the little bike into the arena, and it was, like, very well produced, but very kind of lackluster. I was waiting for something cool to happen, and he just kind of rode into the locker room, and everyone knew it was him, and it wasn't very cool. So, but he looked good. I saw Russell Westbrook and Nick Collison as White Man Can't Jump.
That was good.
That one is really good. I like that one a lot. The other one that I thought was really good. Oh, Isaiah Thomas is Eazy-E. He was funny. And Dwayne Wade and his wife as Millie Vanilli. I don't know if you guys saw that, but that was pretty damn good looking too.
I mean, there is a correct answer to this question, and it is Nick Collison and Russell Westbrook, White Men Can't Jump.
Yeah.
With honorable mention to Channing Frye as Blank Man. But
no, I didn't see that. I mean, that's funny.
And a third place to Kevin Love as Sting. That was pretty awesome,
too.
Oh,
yeah. And he was with...
Although I would have went white. I would have went white and black instead of, you know, Wolfpack Sting, but that's not a big deal.
And then the girl he was with was Hollywood Hogan.
Yeah, she was Hollywood.
She was tiny. It was pretty funny.
But yeah, I mean, that White Man Can't Jump. That's one of my favorite movies of all time. So that one was huge, even though I am not a Russell Westbrook fan at all.
Stop it.
Yeah, that was. Oh no, I'm not a fan at all. Not even a little bit.
Well, it's a good thing you're not in America, because you don't sound very American.
That's why I had to leave. You know, they gave me a choice. So
love it or leave it. Oh my God!
All right, so I'm gonna give my top five. So fifth place is Kyle Korver as Willy Wonka.
Yeah, that was good.
That was pretty good. Four was Jabari Parker as a Black Panther.
Yeah, that was funny. That was funny.
Third would be Russell Westbrook and Nick Collison as White Man Can't Jump. That was really good. Two is Carmelo Anthony as the Night King from The Walking Dead, from Game of Thrones.
That was serious, man.
That was dope. And then hats off to the King. LeBron won. LeBron's was creepy. Like, I just imagine a 6'8 LeBron James walking at you in a clown uniform. And that's pretty much a nightmare waiting to happen.
I don't know. It's kind of clown's kind of a layup, but he did look really scary. I do want to point out Carmelo lose points because the Night King technically doesn't wear armor, and he had armor on. So that's why he dropped a little bit in my power rankings. But he looked really good though.
Well, too bad none of them didn't dress as the Cavaliers defense. That would have been terrifying.
They did. You just couldn't see him.
Yeah,
it wasn't there.
Shout out to Tristan Thompson and Khloe Kardashian. You know, he may be worthless on the court, but at least they do a good, pretty good Khal Drogo and Khaleesi.
Yeah, he looked hotter than she did.
Well, that wraps it up. Let us know your favorite Halloween costume on Twitter at ODG Basketball. Thank you for listening, guys. Thank you for hopping on.
Anytime.
Adios. Dennis gave and gathered.
Sorry.